and I saw that what had at first appeared to be another traitor was, in fact, a thin human male, dressed in mud-spattered crimson robes. He was bald-headed, and his hands, the fingers worked until they were misshapen and claw-like, scratched at the walls with a fragment of shrapnel, etching bizarre geometric shapes and forms. Simply being in his presence seemed to irritate something deep and unpleasant inside my skull, creating a sense of pressure behind my eyes. His eyes had long ago been removed, the sockets roughly stitched shut and puckered. Nevertheless, I had the unnerving sense that he was looking directly at me, despite the fact I remained concealed in shadow.
The white and the black and the white. Life to death to life. The tooth and the claw.
Those symbols, they're the same as the others we found. Aye, this might be what the traitors seek, but it is no thing of chaos. It is an astropath.
An astropath? Here!
Illith slid from the shadows to stand before the decrepit man. The astropath twitched and cocked his head, then smiled broadly, showing the yellowed broken stumps of teeth.
The black and the white! The white and the black! Yes! Yes! To you it shall be divulged!
The astropath twitched again, clenching his fists so hard that his broken nails broke the flesh of his palms. Blood trickled down his wrists.
What shall be divulged?
Whispers in darkness. Messages in smoke.
Messages?
I believe our target has been acquired, Illith.
Then I would hear your message.
Our mission was to extract him.
Our mission has changed. Speak on, old man.
Ravens of iron. Ravens of smoke. On Taltos do they gather, where the sky burns with the fire of three suns. The children of Korax rise, and the darkling things twist and writhe at their doings. Hunted have the hunters become, and shadows shall be drawn into the light. What was old is new again, and what is new may yet prove old. A reckoning is coming for the white and the black. The black and the white. Not all who walk in shadow bear the mark. This one knows the truth of it. He is the proof.
He turned his head to look directly at Mordrin, stabbing a bony finger in his direction.
I know nothing of what this creature speaks. Taltos, is that not the world upon which the Iron Ravens fell?
Aye, fallen into the warp over a millennium ago.
Tell me, old man, does Taltos live anew?
Can we even trust a word he says? He's clearly lost his mind.
We have no choice. We shall hear him.
The white and the black. The black and the white. Life, and then death, and then life. Three suns burning, bright as the Emperor's light.
The madness has consumed him. He speaks of events long past.
And yet many agents seek his counsel. We must deliver his words to the Ravenspire. There might yet be truth and revelation to be found if Taltos has returned from the war.
They are close, and yet they ignored this creature. It is clear they have passed this way. What else might they seek aboard this train?
Arteryx, remain here to guard the astropath. Let us be clear about the purpose of these creatures before we seek extraction.
I would hear your counsel, Quell. What do you believe the words of the astropath to mean?
I find his words opaque, Chaptermaster. Rich in meaning, but lacking sense. And yet...
Go on.
And yet, in attempting to tease meaning from his gibbering, I find myself recalling the fate of the Iron Ravens, our ill-fated successors.
What of them?
Surely, Chaptermaster, you recall their fate. It was you who spoke to me of it.
Of course. but I am interested in what you perceive. Please, continue.
As you wish. Little is known. They were lost to the warp almost 1,000 years ago.
They gave their lives heroically.
And yet the astropath spoke of Taltos, of ravens who walked in shadow. Taltos was an imperial world, was it not? Long lost to the warp.
Indeed.
Then what if, with the advent of the Cicatrix Maledictum, Taltos has re-emerged, spat out from the rent in the warp to once again take its rightful place amongst the stars? Perhaps a small contingent of Iron Ravens survives.
Such a thought bears careful consideration. If the planet has re-emerged, it might yet bear the scars of corruption. So, too, the survivors of such an odyssey.
Is it not then paramount that the Raven Guard be the first to seek the truth? If the integrity of the surviving Iron Ravens were to be called into question...
Then the eye of the Inquisition might yet fall upon the Raven Guard. The Inquisitor must not find anything on Taltos. If necessary, the successors must be purged. The honor of our chapter is at stake.
I shall leave for Taltos immediately, the Shadow Masters and I.
No. You remain injured, Queld. Rest here a while.
As you wish, Master. We slipped through into the next carriage to witness a scene of utter carnage. Two raptors were in the process of massacring a horde of civilian passengers who were piling into the gangway in an effort to flee the creature's advance. The viewing ports had all been shattered, and passengers had begun flinging themselves from the train rather than face the horror of the raptors' onslaught. The raptors, however, seemed intent on cutting a swathe through the crowd, their attentions affixed on a single, fleeing figure. A wiry-looking man dressed in a hooded robe, with sunken eyes and a hooked nose. The fingers of his left hand appeared to have been replaced with a bristling array of syringes, each containing a different colored liquid. When he caught sight of us over his shoulder, his eyes widened in surprise.
Quelt! Get after the man they're pursuing! We'll see to the traitors!
My blade hungers for their tainted blood! No!
The raptors twisted at the sound of Mordrin's battle cry, the first turning directly into the downward arc of his blade. Its left arm dropped to the floor, popped off at the elbow. It screeched in pain, and then lurched forward, clawing at his chest plate with its remaining talons, its wings beating furiously, unable to give it lift in such a confined space. Illith, meanwhile, was closing on the other, shells chewing holes in its leathery flesh, shattering brittle bones and ancient ceramite panels. As he closed the gap between them, his combat knife flashed, and they locked in a grim embrace, the raptor's talons flashing. I hurried after the human. Was this, then, the interrogator we had sought? And why did the raptors seek him, and not the message-bearer? I battered civilians out of my path as I hurried after him. The crowd surged, pushing left. I twisted to see another raptor crash through the side of the carriage. I fired. Bolter shells thudding into the creature's chest, but it was simply too fast. I dropped to one knee as it dove, raising my combat knife and opening a long line across its side. The raptor's retaliating blow sent me sprawling forward, but I rolled, coming back up on the other knee, bolter firing. This time the shells punched hunks of flesh from the creature's shoulder, leaving its right arm hanging limp by its side. I could see it was close to death. The knife wound in its side had spilled its innards, and one of the bolt shells had opened up its chest, revealing a writhing mass of maggots within. I kept my bolter trained on it, but readied my knife. When it came for me, I would take its head from its shoulders. It lurched, and I sidestepped, blade flashing. The creature staggered forward, its head lolling. Blood bubbled from the wound, gushing down my arm. I stepped back, pushing it aside, turning to seek the man I had been pursuing. But there were two further raptors in my path. They came at me from either side. Too late, I realized they were shepherding me towards an open rent in the roof, a hole through which a third creature was now descending.
I shall not die here!
I lashed out with my blade as the three of them fell in, opening wound after wound in their festering flesh. Within moments, however, the creatures had me pinned.
Get off me!
For a moment, I managed to wrench my arm free. I caught one of the creatures a glancing blow across the side of the head. But it was already too late. I was being hauled into the air, dragged towards the rent in the roof.
Quelled!
There was no time. Illith's shots burst upon the raptors' hides, but did little to slow them. They issued a chorus of shrill caws, and then we were out of the train, soaring away through the dust cloud, the train thundering away far below us.
Unhand me!
And it is during the ensuing battle that you sustained the wound in your neck.
The memory fades. I am uncertain.
I see that the wound runs far deeper than I feared. The pollution already weakens your mind.
No, Chapter Master, I remain pure.
And yet your memory fails you. Tell me, Quelled, what followed your abduction from the train?
I fought the creature. My bolter was knocked from my grasp as we tumbled through the dusty air. Sand choked my visor.
And then?
And then, I know not. Then I was here in the Ravenspire.
How interesting. I see the conflict inside you. Your instinct is powerful and seeks to override your addled mind.
The wound. What? What is this? A needle? What is this? My neck. It was never a wound. What foul substance have you used to pervert my mind, heretic?
Oh, just a little concoction of my own devising. I'm delighted to report that it has proved most satisfactory. You succumbed quite readily to its sweet embrace. Tell me, did you truly believe yourself to be within the confines of your master's tower? There is no escape, little bird. But fear not, you're quite safe. Master Shrike will see to that. Now, let's see about finding a fresh needle, shall we? After all, we're going to be here a while.
I shall resist you, abomination. You and your foul kin shall not break me.
Such vitriol, such vehemence. I may yet animate your corpse for amusement when you're dead. Or feed you to my maggots. But first, I'd like to finish our little chat. Now, where were we?
I would appreciate it greatly if you'd remove your elbow from this small of my back.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's going on? We finally stopped.
Most perceptive of you.
We're on the outskirts of Shadowlon Hive. I can see it through the window. If we can get out, maybe we can get to safety and avoid those things.
Ah, so you've seen them, have you?
Haven't you? They're monstrous. I don't think anyone on this train will ever sleep again.
Yes, that is a problem, isn't it?
Emperor, protect us! They're here!
Then it is time I took my leave. Those creatures seek to devour my soul.
What are you doing? You've locked the door! Let us out! You can't do this!
Think of it as a kindness, huh? A cure for the insomnia you so fear. It really is the only option.
Well?
I have the information you require, my lord. If I could prevail upon you for an emergency evacuation.
You've made another mess.
Oh, the Adeptus Astartes are doing a fine job cleaning up behind me.
Very well, very well. Be ready.
Oh, I am always that, my lord.
It is done. Delafron is purged. The traitors shall not spread their foul plague throughout the hives.
And what of Queld? Do we seek him?
He is one of our own. A brother of battle, forged in blood and shadow.
Aye. And he shall be sought. But first, we must return to Deliverance with word of our findings. The Iron Ravens have long been thought lost to the warp. Yet the Cicatrix Maledictum stirs. And what was once fiction is now fact. We must warn Master Shrike with all haste, for it is unknown what awaits us on Taltos.
They are brothers of the Raven, blessed of Korax himself, yet you doubt their integrity?
I do not. But I cannot know the mind of those who seek them. This Inquisitor has a certain reputation.
Then we have little choice. Let us hope that Queld might yet prevail where others have not.
He is one of us. He is Ravengard.
Aye.
For Korax, then!
For Korax!
Inquisitor Sabathier.
Bloodhive, your report made interesting reading. I presume the astropath died on the mag train.
Yes, my lord.
Shame. I should have liked to question him further.
I regret it immensely, my lord.
Fear not, Bledheim. You shall have your opportunity soon. There are further questions to be asked of others who seek to obfuscate. Our enemy has many facets, and we strive to uncover them all.
I stand ready.
Come. Walk with me a moment. Given the destruction left in your wake, I am most surprised to see you sustained no injuries during your recent expedition.
A wise man knows his strengths, my lord, and his weaknesses. I have never relished combat. I leave such things to those better suited to them.
How generous of you.
So, what would you have me do next, my lord?
Events on Delafron have ruffled feathers. Our investigation here is over.
To Taltos, then.
Indeed. We begin preparations on the morrow. First, we look to our allies. We need a blunt tool for a blunt job.
I understand, my lord. I shall make contact with the Red Hunters immediately.
Excellent. Soon, Bledheim. The heretic spawn of the Raven Guard shall be exposed.
Labyrinth of Sorrows by George Mann. Performed by Sean Barrett, Rupert Degas, and Saul Wrightley. Produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library. The planet was dead. A rotten husk suffocated beneath a blanket of thick, pestilent fog. Kasherat had always been a place of death. A mortuary world, bristling with the stele of glorious tombs, overgrown with forests of monumental spires and statuary. Here there was nothing but tributes to the long-dead heroes of old, the forgotten soldiers of millennia past. Yet now, even the curators of this hallowed place were dead or diseased, overcome, conquered. If there was any indigenous life left upon this blighted world, it was nothing but carrion, picking over the remains of what had gone before, reveling in the reek of death and despair. Kasherat had been lost, just as its sister planets in the Sargassian Reach had been lost, swept away in a tide of blood, plague, and suffering. Here, on Kasherat, the Imperium had buckled. Here, there was only death. Yet amongst the marble tombs of this vast necropolis, things were stirring. Things that had once resembled human beings, but were now barely recognizable as such. Things so depraved, deformed, and pox-ridden that they were reduced to scuttling through the shattered ruins like so many animals running errands for their foul masters. These were the pitiful wretches who had given over their lives to the sickening. These were the disciples of Nurgle. Amongst these former men walked the grotesque giants of the warband Imperion's Blight. Space Marines of the heretical Death Guard Legion, traitors to the Emperor's cause. Monsters, Captain Daeed considered, who deserved nothing as forgiving as simple death. These foul warriors of chaos, polluted not only by the stink of treachery, but also by the stench of unnatural plague, had prosecuted a brief and terrible campaign throughout the Sargassian Reach. 7 Imperial worlds had been obliterated, the populations poisoned, the very soil blighted beneath the boots of their oppressors. Even now, war still raged across the surface of 3 of these planets, although Daeed knew that without reinforcements, without some way to alter the course of the war, the Imperial cause was all but lost. The Plague Marines were legion, and they, in contrast, were few. Nevertheless, Daeed would fight on until the bitter end, clinging to those benighted worlds until the very last of them had fallen. Such was the duty of a Space Marine. Such was the honor of a brazen Minotaur. For now, though, Daeed had other priorities to attend to. The means, perhaps, by which to turn the tide of the war. At the very least, the means by which he could offer his brothers a fighting chance, a reason to hope. Somewhere on Kasherat was the key to their salvation. If only he could find it. Daeed sat rigid in his webbing as the Thunderhawk banked, its engines howling as it dipped beneath the cover of the dark, viscous clouds. The planet's atmosphere was thick with the aura of death, a haze of green mist that cloaked the mortuary world to form a near impenetrable shroud. The Thunderhawk sighed as its air brakes dragged at this putrid fog, churning great funnels in its wake. It slewed around, searching for a place to set down, its search lamps penetrating the eerie gloom. It drifted along a corridor of marble spires, dipping and banking to avoid the structures that loomed out of the fetid haze. And then, moments later, the pilot was easing it down between 2 massive obelisks, its landing gear sinking into the soft loam. The engines wheezed for a moment longer, and then were still. If the arrival of the Thunderhawk had been noticed by anyone on the planet's surface, it went unremarked. There was no chatter of autocannons, no bark of plasma guns. Either the traitors were unaware of Daeed's arrival, or they were unconcerned. The latter thought didn't offer Daeed much comfort as he pulled himself free of the webbing, glancing from side to side to see his battle brothers doing the same. A few seconds later, the vessel's hatch slid open, and Captain Daid of the Brazen Minotaur's Third Company stood framed in the doorway, a gleaming silhouette against the stark light spilling out from within. He was tall, even for a space marine, encased in shimmering golden power armor. His shoulders were draped with the pelt of one of the hulking black lions that roamed the forests of Tauron, his home world, and his left pauldron bore the blue-on-white bull's head insignia of his chapter. In his fist he carried a slender power axe, its head finely etched with Tauronic traceries and runes. Daid's neck was thick with muscle, and his face was craggy and tanned, pitted with innumerable scars, as if he wore his centuries of service to the Emperor like tally marks on his flesh. He stood for a moment, sucking at the foul air, his nose wrinkling in distaste. His eyes narrowed as he surveyed the eerie landscape around them.
There is nothing but death here, Badus.
In response, another figure appeared in the hatchway behind him. He wore the same shining golden armor as his captain, but his lower face was swathed in a long, plaited beard, and he carried a bolter in his right fist.
The stench of the traitor. Their very presence is enough to choke the life out of a world.
True enough, brother.
Daid hefted his axe.
But remember, we are not here to reclaim Kasharat from the traitors, much as the notion galls me. We are here to retrieve what they have taken from us, so that we may use it against them. We must look to the war and not to the battle. This mortuary world will be of little use to either side in the conflict ahead.
Aye, but it makes for a damn good hiding place.
Bardus peered out through the open hatch. He raised his bolter as he spoke, as if he expected something diabolical to come lurching out of the fog at any moment. Daid could hardly blame him for that. It wasn't as if it hadn't happened before. They'd been caught unawares any number of times in the last few months during their extended campaign against the Death Guard. There were things in the fog, half-dead things that didn't even register life signs on their auspexes. Cursed things. The spawn of chaos. The damned smog gave the enemy their best advantage. That, and the fact they seemed able to survive wounds that would have felled a normal space marine, shrugging off bolt of fire and blows from Daid's power axe as if they'd barely been scratched. Then, of course, there were their minions, creatures that had once been men, but were now nothing but shambling, diseased carcasses, unholy plague spawn, created only to spread the festering curse of chaos ever further, or to soak up fire on the field of battle. Even these pitiful creatures had proved difficult to dispatch in such incessant numbers. The Death Guard had infected the populations of entire worlds as they cut a swathe through the Sargassian Reach. Now they were goading the fallen into battle in their multitudes.
You stand there talking like tacticians, brothers.
Targus laughed as he hefted his heavy bolter onto his shoulder behind them.
I hunger for the opportunity to put some more of those plague-ridden traitors out of their misery.
Daid grinned. He could understand that impulse, the desire to smite the traitorous wretches where they stood. He relished the idea as much as Targus himself, burned, in fact, with the need to bring the Emperor's justice to bear on their corrupt souls.
I assure you, Targus, there will be time enough for us all to blunt our axes in the stinking corpses of our enemies. I wish for nothing more myself. But first, we have a job to do.
Daid turned and strode down the disembarkation ramp, his footsteps strangely muffled by the thick, diseased air. Glancing up, he could make out only the spear-like tips of mortuary structures silhouetted against the sky, and the dull orbs of the twin moons that circled Kasharat in their stately, perpetual dance. Around him, there was nothing but an impenetrable bank of putrid fog. Yet even before it was infested with the plague, Daid mused, there would have been a grim, funereal air about the place. He stood for a moment as the others clambered out of the hatch, coming to join him, their boots sinking in the sticky loam.
Engage your respirators.
Daed fixed his own mouthpiece into place and activated his fox link.
Keep this foul air from settling in your lungs.
He glanced around at his assembled squad as they followed his lead, each of them fixing their helms to their gorgets with a series of hissing pneumatic sighs.
Bast, check your auspex for signs of life.
Bast unclipped the device from his belt and studied the radar.
Nothing, Captain.
He turned the auspex so that Daed could see the display.
It's this fog. It smothers everything. I can't get a reading. It's as if the mist itself is alive.
Widen the spectrum. Look for anything at all.
Captain!
Daed silenced Thrall's objections with a wave of his hand. The auspex chirped momentarily before going silent again.
Hushed!
It's intermittent, Captain. But there is something there. A beacon.
Bast turned, and the auspex emitted another dull electronic bleep.
That way!
He pointed to indicate the direction from which he'd registered the distress signal.
It's most likely a trap!
Targus moved around to stand before Daed.
They may be traitors, but they are not fools. They know we are here.
Daed set his jaw. He fixed Targus with a resolute stare.
Roll.
Aye, Captain.
Move out.
Daed watched Targus as he fell into formation behind the others. The enormous bulk of the heavy bolter balanced on his right pauldron. He understood his brother's reluctance. They probably were walking into a trap. But there were no other options. They had a mission to complete, and they were brazen minotaurs. They would face whatever the enemy put before them with unflinching determination, and they would do it in the name of the Emperor. That, or they would die trying. Daed hefted his power axe, unholstered his bolt pistol, and fell into line behind the others. Through the shadows they moved, as if they had surrendered their corporeal forms to become spirits or wraiths, as if the very shadows themselves were living things that shifted and breathed. Shadows that wore black ceramite armor and harbored vicious adamantium claws. Shadows that were trained to kill. Ravens. Shadow Captain Corin of the Raven Guard flexed his neck and shoulders to dispel the tension. He sensed more than saw his brothers, Argis, Grievous, Cyrus, and Corvan, as the five of them crept through the narrow tunnels of the maze-like mortuary complex, surrounded by the remnants of the dead. Dour faces, hewn from soapstone and marble, loomed out at him from all sides in the gloaming, their blank eyes watching him passively from across the centuries. Ornate tombs, stone coffins, and the skeletal remains of old politicians and administrators, some of them still wearing their now faded finery, lined the walls, embedded in roughly chiseled niches like insects in a hive. It had once been a sacred place, a place to honor the dead in the name of the Emperor. Now, though, the blight of chaos had infected the planet, and even here, in the bowels of this ancient mortuary complex, the evidence of corruption was all around them. Foul mist clung to the air, turning everything a pale, putrid green. The walls were slick with ochre slime, which seemed to quiver and move with the perturbations caused by their passing. Worst of all was the stench, the rotten reek of death and decay that pervaded everything, threatening to overwhelm even Corin's hardened senses. He didn't know what had brought the Death Guard to Kasharat, a mortuary world on the outer rim of the Imperium. Their reasons were opaque. It may simply have been a symptom of their inexorable drive to spread their foul plague, that burning, zealous desire to infect world after world with their sickening rot. But their actions hinted at some greater purpose. Corin knew that his bull-headed brothers, the brazen Minotaurs, would be concerned only with smiting the enemy and not with understanding their motives. To them, Corin knew, the enemy were the enemy, faceless traitors who needed only to be vanquished. That was all they needed to know. Their strategies were not subtle. They did not need to understand their enemy in order to strike them with a wall of sheer force, to overwhelm them with firepower. There was a certain honesty in that sort of combat, and Corrin respected the brazen Minotaurs for their unwavering, unquestioning approach. He had seen them storm their way to victory on more than one occasion, a fist of iron driven into the very heart of the enemy. The Sons of Korax, however, excelled at a different kind of combat. Corrin knew how to strike an enemy where it hurt, to search out their weak points, to foil their plans. The Raven Guard struck from the shadows and were gone before the enemy was even aware of what had happened. That, he knew, was what was needed here, on Kasharat. That would ensure the success of their mission. The mortuary complex would be easily defended, and a full assault would result only in a standoff. That standoff, in turn, would result in a siege that would take days, if not longer, to break. And days were a luxury the brazen Minotaurs didn't have. Not if they wanted to retrieve their target in one piece. Corrin hoped that their brothers might have had a chance by now to pick up the signal from the beacon he had planted earlier amongst the corpses of the corrupted humans who had guarded the entrance to the mortuary complex. He slowed as the passageway opened into a large, cavernous space. They were now far below ground, and looking up, Corrin could see that the space had originally been a natural formation, remodeled sometime in the distant past for the mortuary builder's macabre purposes. Huge stalactites dripped from the roof like fangs encircling an enormous maw. Two colossal statues towered over them, the figures' heads bowed in quiet repose. Each of them clutched a sword and shield and wore an unfamiliar pattern of armor. Effigies, Corrin assumed, of ancient heroes long since forgotten. At the feet of these towering figures stood a small group of grotesque creatures, formerly human, but now mutated and corrupted by the sickening. One bore a writhing, wriggling proboscis where its arm had once been, erupting from just beneath the shoulder joint to curl snake-like in the air. The man's face was deformed with pustulant growths, and his belly was distended and marred with puckered sores. Beside him, another appeared to have lost his lower jaw. His tongue, now oversized and sickly yellow, lolled across his naked chest, where his skin erupted in innumerable boils. He clutched a las rifle in his disgusting, weeping fingers. There were five others, each of them bearing the diabolical mark of Nurgle. Corrin glanced from side to side, noting how his brothers had fanned out in the shadows, drawing a wide semicircle around the group of cultists. This was how the Raven Guard worked. So attuned were they to each other, so practiced were they in the art of subtle warfare, that he need not even issue his command. Intuitively, his veterans knew what he expected, what was necessary. Corrin readied himself. He would enjoy this, enjoy dispatching these foul barons of the taint. Silently, he raised his twin lightning claws, the flashing blades glinting in the half-light. He drew his breath, and then swooped forward, barely making a sound as he erupted from the shadows like a whirlwind of slashing blades, spinning about so that his talons traced wide circles through the miasmic air. The lightning claws parted the flesh of the nearest cultist like warm butter, slicing him open from shoulder to belly, so that his body collapsed silently in a bloody heap in the dirt. Corrin's blood sang as he twisted, knocking aside the raised barrel of the las rifle and skewering a second cultist through the belly. The man opened his mouth as if to howl in agony, but was silenced a second later as Corrin's other set of talons flashed, removing the cultist's head from his shoulders and spattering hot, festering blood over Corrin's ebony chest plate. Around him, Corrin's brothers moved silently in the dance of death, ducking and weaving and swiping as their blades and talons dispatched the remaining five cultists in a matter of sheer moments. The disciples of the Death Guard barely had time to register what was happening before it was all over. None of them even had the opportunity to squeeze off a shot or so much as raise an arm in defense. Within seconds, the Raven Guard had melted away into the shadows, their work done. the only trace of their passing, the quivering heap of corpulent flesh and severed limbs on the ground, writhing with the swarms of maggots that the cultists had harbored within their obscene bodies. Talons dripping with gore, Corin moved silently to join his brothers.
Captain?
Yes, Argus.
I understand, Captain, that we owe the brazen Minotaurs a grave debt. But should we not honor them on the field of battle as they honored us, and not silently from the shadows?
Argus, the brazen Minotaurs honored us in the only way they know how, in open combat, using their brute strength to aid us in our hour of need. Their sacrifice was great, but honor is not simply a matter of trading one life for another, of standing side by side on the field of battle. We honor our brothers the way we know how. The situation on Kasharat demands more subtlety than our bull-headed brothers could muster. We repay our debt the Raven's way.
Yes, Captain.
One of the shadows up ahead inclined its head and Corin smiled. Yes, the Raven's way. Corin watched as Argus slipped away into the darkness and then followed silently behind. The corpses were hideous to look upon, and if he hadn't seen their like a thousand times before, it might have been enough to turn even Daeed's iron stomach. There were at least 10 of them, perhaps more, heaped one upon another like some grisly diorama, an assemblage of severed limbs, decapitated heads, and spilled organs. Some of these body parts still writhed, as if by their own volition, as if the diabolical pestilence that had infected them was unwilling to release its foul grip, even now, after death. They twitched and spasmed, as if trying to pull themselves back together, trying to reassemble themselves into new, blasphemous forms. Bast was standing over this strange monument to the dead, his jaw set firm in obvious disgust.
This appears to be the origin of the signal, Captain.
Daeed sensed movement and glanced down to see a twitching arm scrabbling in the dirt near his boots, its fingernails raking pathetically at his leg brace. He sent it spinning away into the murky fog with a sharp kick.
Explain. The beacon, Captain. It must be buried somewhere in there amongst the corpses, transmitting its distress signal.
Bast was still studying the readout on his auspex, and he dropped to his haunches, running the device over the slurry of bodies. One of the torsos twitched suddenly, and Thrall stilled it again with a short burst from his bolter, sending a fountain of blood and gore into the air. It spattered Bast where he stood, but he continued to study the readout without comment.
Like I said, a trap! They're trying to lure us in!
The 5 brazen Minotaurs were standing by the pillared entrance to a vast mausoleum complex, much of which Daeed had gathered was buried far beneath their feet. The readings he'd seen suggested there was a warren of tunnels and chambers stretching for miles below ground. Although given the interference caused by the green mist, he knew the veracity of any such readouts was in doubt. If they entered the labyrinthine structure, they'd be going in blind. The entrance yawned open behind him, a marble staircase descending into the gloom. The traitor's icons and wards were splashed in sickly green across the pillars like a warning. Or, Daeed considered, like a challenge.
A trap? Why would the enemy leave a distress beacon buried in a heap of their own dead?
The enemy are not easily fathomed.
Bardas had his back to them as he kept watch, surveying their surroundings for anything that might come swooping out of the fog.
There is no understanding the depths of their perversity.
Nor should we wish to understand it, Bardas. For to understand it is to give yourself over to its foul corruption.
Daeed glanced from side to side, hefting his axe as if anxious to bury it in something.
But Targus is right. It may yet prove to be a trap.
Or worse, there may be others who wish to claim our targets as their own.
Daeed nodded as he mulled this over. Were there other hostile forces here on Kasharat? Their surveillance had suggested only the presence of the Death Guard traitors and their cretinous followers. But perhaps Bast was right. Perhaps another faction had seen the opportunity to alter the course of the conflict in their favor. Perhaps even now, they were winding their way through the tunnels below in search of Daeed's quarry. Targus was shaking his head impatiently, and Daeed prickled with annoyance.
Captain, we should leave this place. No good will come of it. The enemy waits for us in sight. I am convinced these stinking corpses are nothing but a tribute to their vile god, intended only to lure us into their trap. We should return to where the real battle is, where we can honor the Emperor with blood on our axes, instead of skulking around here amongst the filth and the dead.
Daeed shook his head.
Lord Targus, I too long for the opportunity to cleave their traitorous heads from their shoulders, to spill their foul blood upon my boots. But our mission here is critical. The fate of worlds rests on what we might find inside that foul warren. If Bast is right, if it were to fall into the hands of others, we cannot risk it. So, we will go on in the name of the Emperor, and we will do what is needed of us. We are brazen Minotaurs.
Daeed turned at the sound of a boot scraping on stone, expecting to find another of the serpentine body parts stealing away from its kin. Instead, he caught sight of a human being squatting on a nearby rock, cocking its head as it listened into their conversation. One of its eyes had swollen to unnatural proportions, and its forearms and fingers had become bloated and fat, oozing pus and ichor. When it saw him looking, it made to scramble away behind the rock, dragging its enormous, distended belly behind it. Daeed leapt forward, moving faster than his immense size belied. He shot out his gauntleted fist and grabbed the pitiful thing's head between his fingers. The creature whimpered and stared up at him, its scabrous lips parting as if about to beg for its life, but Daeed did not award it the opportunity to speak. He closed his fist, bursting its fragile skull between his fingers. Its twitching corpse dropped to the ground, stinking pus and blood spurting from the stump of its neck. Daeed glanced around at his brothers.
We press on. We find what we came here for, trap or otherwise.
He didn't wait for their agreement before stalking forward and disappearing into the enveloping darkness of the mausoleum complex. The incessant buzzing was growing louder. Corin pressed himself into an alcove and waited. The five Raven Guard had wound their way deeper into the mortuary complex, drawing closer to what their auspexes and their intuition told them was the nexus of the labyrinth, the heart of the structure, where, they reasoned, the target would be found. And, Corin considered, most likely a concentration of traitor marines and their pox-ridden kin, too. They had dispatched another seven cultists as they'd passed through the warren of tunnels and deeper into the bowels of the structure. Here, the ornamentation of the tombs was less ostentatious, more functional, older even than those above. In sharp contrast, evidence of inhabitation by the traitors grew all the more explicit. Rotting, fleshy membranes covered much of the walls, dripping with toxic slime, and the ground was thick with an oozing, corrosive sludge that lapped around their boots and made it harder for them to pass in silence. Bright runes flickered inside Corin's helm, warning of airborne poisons and miasmic spores that once lodged in the lungs would multiply at an alarming rate, overloading even the resilient metabolism of a space marine. Toxic shock would follow, or worse, infection by the vile pestilence that had claimed the traitors. Corin knew what he would do before he ever succumbed to that. He thanked the Emperor for the resilience of his respirator. The buzzing was closer now, the screaming whine of engines churning the fetid air. Corin watched the mouth of the tunnel, readying himself for battle, waiting to see what would round the bend. Moments later, he got his answer. Two man-sized machines came buzzing along the passageway, twin rotary engines burring. They hovered a meter above the ground, red lights winking in the darkness like murderer's eyes. They were composed of nothing but huge sacks of decaying, quivering flesh, melded with corroded machine parts and weapons, in what Corin took to be a sick parody of life. He had seen their like before on the field of battle. Blight drones. The drones buzzed down the tunnel towards the Raven Guard, trailing stringy mucus behind them, where they brushed against the dripping walls. Corin gave a minute shake of his head, and he hoped his brothers had seen him in the gloom. They would let the foul things pass, engaging them only if they themselves were engaged. The drones were guards, nothing more, and destroying them would not only be a waste of ammunition, it would also risk bringing about unnecessary attention. The mission was everything. The instruments of the enemy could wait. Corin watched with gritted teeth as they brushed past, filling the passageway with their disgusting bulk, their putrid flanks only centimeters from his helm. Moments later, the buzz of their rotary engines had receded into the distance. Corin eased himself out of the alcove where he'd been concealing himself. He watched as his four brothers did the same, seemingly solidifying from the shadows, their ebon armor coalescing out of the darkness. Silently, they moved on. The tunnels continued to descend into the earth, winding and doubling back on themselves, sometimes opening into wider, uninhabited caverns, other times drawing in until they were so narrow that Corin had to walk sideways to squeeze his bulk through them. Gravis took the lead at the head of the small squad, and it was soon after they'd put an end to another clutch of cultists that Corin saw him stop suddenly at the mouth of a T-junction and hold up his hand in warning.
What is it, Gravis?
Death Guard, Captain. Three of them, up ahead.
Stealthily, Corin slipped past Cyrus and the others, coming to stand beside Gravis. He peered around the corner. There, in the sickly glow of a candle sconce, stood three of the traitor Marines. Their now deformed armor was ancient, more ancient even than Corin's own venerable suit of Corvus pattern armor. Unlike Corin's, however, that of the traitors was now so degraded and corroded that it barely appeared to offer them any protection at all. It had clearly been altered to accommodate the mutated bulk of its inhabitants, and Corin guessed they must have worn it for eons, ever since the warp had first swallowed them and spat them out again in new, twisted, decrepit forms. Their flesh had grown through the cracks in the ceramite plating, enveloping it, causing the suits to become intrinsically part of them, inseparable from what remained of their once glorious bodies. Their heads bulged beneath their broken helms, and Corin could see the face of one of them through the broken visor, his eyes shriveled and weeping toxic ichor. Poison gases spewed from vents between their armor plates. Each of them carried bolt pistols and power swords, their blades stained rusty brown with spilled blood. To Corin, the sight of the Plague Marines was disgusting beyond comprehension. Their vileness extended beyond the physical, of course, but it was as if their traitorous nature had manifested in their flesh, had been made physical and real as a result of their unholy pacts. He despised everything they stood for. One of them stood fingering his own entrails, which spilled out from a jagged crack in his power armor to hang loose around his knees. Insects and other, more unnatural creatures picked around in the ruins of his belly. Flies circled the heads of each of the traitors, and the reek of decay was all permeating, even through the relative protection of Corin's respirator.
For Korax, brothers.
For Korax.
Without even the slightest sound, Corin slipped around the corner, keeping his back to the wall as he began to maneuver himself into position for the ambush. The flickering candle in the wall sconce cast the Plague Marines in a warm, yellow orb of light, and Corin knew that to get close to them, he would have to betray his position. No matter. He and his brothers would silence the traitors before they had the opportunity to raise the alarm. He glanced back to see the others following behind. Cyrus, Gravis and Argus across the tunnel from him, keeping to the shadows as they crept steadily towards their prey. The traitors seemed content with their own concerns, evidently still unaware of the Raven Guard's proximity. Corin paused, now just a few feet behind the nearest Death Guard. He could see the ancient iconography on the pauldron, the old symbol of their legion, now barely visible beneath layers of grime and necrotic, rippling flesh. He glanced at Argus, issued a hand gesture to indicate that the others should follow his lead, and then, in one swift motion, launched himself from the wall, unsheathed his combat blade from his belt, and slit the throat of the closest Plague Marine from behind. The traitor choked and stumbled backwards, causing Corin to do the same. Thick yellow pus oozed from the open wound in the Death Guard's throat, seeping out from the rotten tissue between his helm and the remnants of his gorget. The Plague Marine turned, swinging its fist up and round, catching Corin hard in the chest and sending him spinning to the ground. He could barely believe the traitor was still standing. The wound in his throat yawned open like a wet, smiling mouth, but the Plague Marine seemed utterly unperturbed by this wound, which should have felled him. Corin's brothers had engaged the other two traitors and were now locked in vicious hand-to-hand combat, ducking and weaving to avoid the poison blades that threatened to open up their armor and allow the pestilence inside. Corin rolled, springing to his feet, his lightning claws sparking as he thrashed out, tangling them in the traitor's intestines and wrenching them free. The Plague Marine's guts spattered in a heap by Corin's boots, but still he came on wordlessly, swinging his power sword in a wide arc so that Corin had to raise his other talons quickly to defend himself, batting aside the deadly weapon. The Death Guard staggered with the momentum, and seeing his chance, Corin kicked out, trying to keep the foul thing at bay. The Death Guard charged forward, ignoring a swipe from Corin's claw that drew four long gashes across its partially exposed chest. It struck him hard on his right shoulder, and he shuddered under the force of the blow, feeling his pauldron crack with the impact. Warning sigils flared up inside his helm. Once again, Corin lashed out, his talons raking open great furrows in the Plague Marine's belly, tearing away ceramite and stringy flesh. Still, it came on. The thing was near impossible to kill, so close to death it was already. Corin twisted at the sound of Cyrus crying out beside him, and saw with horror that one of the other traitors now held his brother's beaked helm between its fists. He was appalled to see a broken fragment of spine trailing from the base of the helm, where the Plague Marine had physically ripped Cyrus's head from his shoulders. Crimson blood spouted from the stump of Cyrus's neck, and as Corin watched, his corpse toppled backwards against the passage wall, sliding to the ground in a black heap. Corin embraced the rage that he felt welling up inside of him, but did not allow it to overwhelm him. He ducked to avoid another swipe from the Plague Marine's fist, and struck low with his lightning claw, burying his talons in the traitor's right knee and shearing away its lower leg in a flurry of sparks. The traitor twisted and buckled, dropping heavily to the floor, its power sword skittering away across the ground. Wasting no time, Corin leapt forward, pinning one of the traitor's arms beneath his boot and forcing his talons into the throat wound he had opened earlier. He finished the job with a grunt of satisfaction.